Welcome to our spotlight on arts and culture in Canada. Hello, I'm Mark Montgomery. Today, more of a cultural aspect of the show as we look at Chinese immigration to Canada. Vivian Poi is a retired Canadian senator, an historian, and author of Passage to Promised Land, Voices of Chinese Immigrant Women to Canada. The Chinese have been coming to Canada since the earliest days of this country, but in the early part of this country's history, it was almost exclusively men. As an immigrant Chinese woman herself, Vivian Poi felt it important to document through interviews the previously generally unknown experience of Chinese women who immigrated to Canada. These women arrived through a variety of circumstances as political situations changed both in China and in Canada. Ms. Poi notes that with the arrival of women, families and roots in Canada were established, something that did not happen in the Chinese community until more women arrived. As times changed, so too did the type of women, in that in later years women could immigrate on their own and not as wives or servants. These later arrivals were most often educated and were able to easily establish successful careers or were already successful businesswomen when they immigrated. In a moment, my conversation with Ms. Vivian Poi about her book, Passage to Promised Land, Voices of Chinese Immigrant Women to Canada. Vivian Poi, thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Ms. Poi, Passage to Promised Land is based on a university thesis, but why did you choose the subject of the voices of Chinese immigrant women to Canada?
Well, there are a number of reasons. First of all, because I'm a Chinese immigrant woman, also not enough has been written about immigrant women generally and about Chinese women, there's very little written. So I think it's extremely important to see their point of view of immigration settlement and how they view Canadian society.
How did Chinese tradition play a role in Chinese women arriving in Canada? Because some were kept in China for a long time, sons were favored, this kind of thing.
Oh, yes. And this is something that a lot of Canadians don't know. There is a lot of misunderstanding that it was only the Canadian government that disallowed the women to come. And it was just a custom to keep the, you know, this is, again, something that non-Chinese don't know. This kind of customs have been going on for a very long time. And not just to Canada, but to other parts of the world. The men were the ones who went overseas to make money, and then they supported their families at home, and therefore daughters-in-laws were chosen by the parents for themselves, especially by the mother-in-law, because the daughter-in-law ends up living with the mother-in-law and raising the children. So the girls really never got to immigrate overseas, but this is in the old days, and only the boys did. So the women who stayed in China would be raising the children, and when the boys are about 12 years old, they are sent overseas, and the girls just remain in China.
There's another phenomenon mentioned in the book, which is the whole issue of picture brides. Talk to me about that a little bit, Ms. Poi.
Oh, yes. Actually, picture brides doesn't only exist among Chinese. You hear of other groups as well, even for some of the European countries, maybe Eastern European countries. These are for women who wanted a chance to go overseas because their lives were so desperate in China that they would just marry anyone who would be willing to marry them. Actually, one of the women I interviewed who was a picture bride, in fact, I think she was the only one I interviewed, she said that the Canadian immigration wanted to make sure that the husband provides enough money that if she changes her mind when she sees him, she can go back to China. And this has existed in many, many cultures, and always for, you know, among poor people who are poor, who wanted a different chance, a new chance in a new country.
The women you interviewed, they often seem very resilient, perhaps because of their experience having to live on their own for so long and or fight for a place in a new country with a strange language and perhaps a man they don't know all that well.
Yeah, very resilient. And you see, at the beginning of my book, I mentioned that these were the survivors. Now, those who didn't survive should be interviewed and studied by another academic, because the ones that who were willing to speak to me, despite all the difficulties they've had in their experience, they were the survivors. You know, in order to survive in under any condition, you have to be very resilient.
I once spoke to an immigrant taxi driver who said, and I asked him, I said, what advice would you give to potential immigrants? And he said, whatever you do, don't work for your members of your own ethnic community because they will exploit you. Was this the case for Chinese, often many of whom didn't speak English or French?
Yeah, well, that is quite possible. But from my interviews, they didn't need to. And some do and some don't. Some would be exploited, but some are also helped in the community. But very often what happens is if you come to a strange country, you don't speak the language, you would go into the area, or nowadays some people call it ghetto, but it's really with people who speak your own language, who have the same traditions and same culture as you, because then you learn to adapt gradually. And, you know, for that reason, sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not. Some would work for their own husbands and things work out well.
Ms. Poi, talk to me about integration over the various decades of Chinese women coming to Canada, many of whom didn't speak the language.
The older generation, many didn't. And so they didn't really integrate into the mainstream society. Those with the language skills do. But even today, some of the older generation, they're just comfortable being, say, in a country like Canada and being with their families. And many of them will help out with childcare, etc. And, you know, to them, maybe because of their age, integration is not as important. And for an older person, it's much more difficult to learn a new language.
How has the immigration pattern changed over the decades?
Oh, tremendously. Since I only wrote about the Chinese immigrant women coming to Canada after the repeal of Chinese exclusion in 1947, at the beginning, it was just family reunification. And the biggest change happened in the 60s because Canada needed skilled people to immigrate to Canada, and at that time, women could come in as independent immigrants instead of being a wife or daughter or a female servant. So it has really, really changed. And of course, in the 1980s, with the business and investors program in immigration, businesswomen came. And some of them, because of their entrepreneurship and the businesses that they run in the home country, they were able to come as heads of household. So the pattern has completely changed, and it's a very big change in the latter half of the 20th century. And that was what I wanted to cover because it was so interesting.
How have Chinese immigrant women contributed to the success of the Chinese Canadian community and to their own success?
Well, when only the men came, they constantly had to go back to China. They would have to send money back. So once the women were here, and of course with their children, they want a good future for their children. I have illustrated in my book that many of the women who came, it was because of the educational opportunities for their children and for a good future for their children. So they are here to stay. men would come and go if they were the only ones here. But the women want to stay and build a future for their children. And because of language skills, because they're well-educated, they just said, okay, we're a part of this community, and I'm going to be very active in it. And because of the women's rights movement, do you remember, in the 70s, and also the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, so educated women expect to be very, very much a part of Canadian society.
Tell me about the title, Passage to Promised Land.
Passage means you go from one place to another, and I call Canada Promised Land. It's not with a D, which is biblical. To me, it is this similar. This is my title for Canada because these people wanted to come. To them, this is a good country. This is where they want to have a good future for themselves and their children. And in the old days, you might be familiar with the word Gamsan, which is Gold Mountain, which referred to California, to BC, to Victoria and New South Wales in Australia, etc. But to me, you know, I call Canada Promised Land.
If you were to sum up that you want people to get from this book, Passage to Promised Land, what would that be, Ms. Poy?
That Canada is an excellent country, to me, the best country in the world to live in, and those who come to this country has to, first of all, integrate. Of course, nowadays it's much easier when they're educated here, integrate and be part of Canadian society and be very active in the process of, say, volunteerism or in the political arena.
Well, Ms. Poy, thank you very much for your time today, and congratulations on this book.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with retired senator, historian, and author Vivian Poy. Her new book is called Passage to Promised Land, Voices of Chinese Immigrant Women to Canada. I have a copy to give away. Simply write to me with your full postal address and put Arts 47 in the subject line. The email address is english@rcinet.ca. I'm Mark Montgomery, and I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. As always, I appreciate your comments. Until next time, do take care of each other. Bye-bye.